wish he'd go away. But as their elected leader, he's set to stay. And when he supports a candidate, they usually tend to win, which makes the Blairites fume while the rest of us just grin. Between the BBC, the Tories, and all the corporate MPs, the tabloid press, the IMF, and all the landed gentry, they're pulling out the stops to stop the ascendancy of I Agree with Jeremy. The case before the nation is the one that we all face. What direction now goes this human race? Do we give up on the missiles and tax the rich a lot? Or give up on society and just embrace the rot? Among us, who would tell us it's the foreigners to blame, not the Blairite Tory billionaires and their rigged neoliberal game? Each day the numbers grow as each day new people see that they agree with Jeremy. I agree with Jeremy.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announced Sunday the preliminary agreement of a trade deal between the EU and the United States that would see the Europeans serve their essentials to the Americans while saying "Danke" for the privilege. Continental stocks sunk along with the euro on the news of what Trump called the biggest deal ever made, and left member nations a scramble to frame national responses. It's the second financial shock visited against NATO-aligned European countries in the past month, following the U.S.-run defense organization NATO demand members raise contributions to 5% of respective GDPs, or roughly 20% of domestic budgets, for military spending. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears, and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among Helmer's many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Skripal in Prison, and the recently released Skripal sequel, Long Live Novichok, the British poison that fooled the world. John's recent article at Dances with Bears, When Negotiation Fails, Try Bribery. When That Fails, Try Extortion. When That Fails, Force, chronicles Donald Trump's bully European weekend in Aberdeen. Welcome back to the program, John.
Thanks very much for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, John, how much of Madam President von der Leyen's appeasement at Balmeti has to do with Russia, if any, and the ongoing war in Ukraine?
Basically, Trump has uncontrollable urge to dominate, to use force. Let's call that the Jeffrey Epstein model of forcing vulnerable people to do whatever you want, extract whatever pleasure you need from them, and then intimidate them, blackmail them, or threaten them so that they do what they want and keep silence for the future. That's the model. Let's understand that the European states, weaklings, politically speaking, domestically speaking. Von der Leyen herself was virtually forced out of Germany by former Chancellor Merkel. My German sources told me that Merkel disliked, distrusted von der Leyen and thought her the worst defense minister Merkel's long term in office ever had. So she was removed to where she would be safer for Germany, to the European Commission. She faces serious corruption charges relating to the COVID vaccination Pfizer scandal. She's vulnerable to the kind of pressures Trump imposed on her. What she can't do is to force the 27 members of the European Union to comply with the terms she's given Trump as easily as she herself complied with Trump. Let's look at it country by country and determine whether the terms von der Leyen has conceded, not only the penalty tariff, but the obligation for investment of $600 billion in the United States. That's not a government decision. Companies can't be forced. They can only be subsidized or paid to invest in the United States if it's not profitable, if it damages their share price, if it ruins their employment base. They will not do it. The $600 billion investment in the U.S. is not something Trump can force through von der Leyen on the 27 European Union members. Second, the volume of energy expenditures the union must commit to, $650 billion, can't be achieved in anything under 10 years, according to the calculations I've seen, at the current rate of European Union imports of coal, oil, gas, and other forms of energy. What does that leave? It leaves some European states, including powerful ones, potentially like France, and some of the East European states like Hungary, resisting whatever Brussels attempts to force on them by way of concessions to Trump. Let's look at it on the other side as well. Let's look at what Trump thinks he's doing and why he thinks he's getting away with it. Let's look at the presidential job approval. On presidential job approval, Trump is running negatively. That's to say, he has among the worst early term negative approval, disapproval versus approval ratings of any recent president, even worse than his first term. That hit a peak in May of, I think I'm get the numbers right, about 52. In July 22, so it's only a few days ago, Trump's voter base voted peak disapproval at 52.6% disapproving of his job performance. That was a gap with the approval rate of 7.1 percentage points. Right now, it's turned down. So in the last week, when he's banging his golf clubs around his golf courses, advertising them for sale, disapproval rating dropped to 51.5%. He thinks what he did in on the golf course is earning voter approval. Well, it did, but by a very small margin. His disapproval gap, let's call it, is now 5.4 percentage points. That's less than 2 percentage points improvement, but he thinks he's gaining. But let's look then at the polling, and this is, audience can go to realclearpolitics.com and look at the numbers in detail. I'm summarizing. You've got a peak disapproval rating for Trump 10 days ago. You now have a slight approval. When you ask U.S. voters whether they approve or disapprove particular policies, this is the way it looks. The strongest disapproval for Trump's performance is on inflation. The negative gap, that's the percentage point difference between his disapproval and his approval on inflation, is 19.6. On the economy, it's 12.5. On the Israel war, that's Trump's performance in licking Israel's boots in genocide, it's 11.4% percentage points. On foreign policy in general, the negative gap's 10.5. And on immigration, his best score, it's the negative approval is still negative, 6.6%. But the approval of his Russia-Ukraine war negotiations is minus 15.9. So next to inflation, voter disapproval of Trump is on his war-making in Europe.
Well, I mean, as long as Trump approves of Trump, which seems to be a confidence that will never flag, I don't know that what Americans think about him even matters. But as far as the deal with the Europeans and the deal with the Russians, now he has said, and you quoted him in your article, saying that, well, I'm not interested in talking anymore. It's funny, for a man who has a bust of Winston Churchill in his office, Churchill, who famously said, it's always better to jaw-jaw than war-war, Trump just says, well, you know, when it comes to this peace talk, I'm tired of talking to Vladimir because he disappoints me or something to this effect. So does this mean then, is this a declaration of war? Then this, he reduced his weird 50-day timeline down to 8 days or something. I'm not even sure what this man means when he speaks, honestly. But is this a de facto declaration of all-out economic and maybe actual kinetic war against Russia? More than we've seen, that is.
Yes, it is. Unlike Churchill, who was fairly megalomaniacal and overconfident in himself and susceptible to grotesque, colossal mistakes on the battlefield, Trump has, and I've reported this, it's not getting picked up, but the man has serious brain disease and cognitive disabilities, cognitive handicaps, and they magnify his personality predilections for megalomania, for narcissism, and for psychopathic violence towards people who disagree with him and people who oppose him. So there's in an important way, individually, psychologically, neurologically, Trump is out of control.
Well, Vanderlyn certainly looked terrified. I saw the video of her little sit down with Trump. And while Trump was speaking, she looked like nothing so much as a beaten dog. And when he turned, the telling part to me was that when he turned his head just slightly to her direction, she almost leaped out of her seat the way you would expect a dog to get on its hind legs. She literally looks terrified. What's the dynamic here between she and Starmer, the other poodle? What's going on here with them now? What coercion is he wielding here?
Well, as you describe them, and I'm not a dog lover. They're dogs.
Oh, come on. Now you're going to lose half the audience.
I'm a cat lover. Stick with me if you're a cat lover. If you're a dog lover, let's put it this way. Von der Leyen, who's unelected but dependent on the support unanimously in many policy cases of European states, she is running scared. And if France goes significantly against her and there's a rebellion of business and unions in Germany against the Chancellor Merz to comply with von der Leyen's concessions to Trump, then von der Leyen is vulnerable to being removed, to being vetoed, to be as humiliated by the Europeans as she was by Trump. But let's go to the other dog, the other poodle. Prime Minister Keir Starmer in the Turnberry Golf Club ballroom was also prepared to lick Trump's boots to appease, to grovel. But underneath it, he resisted the one thing Trump ran that entire long weekend for. That's a British government subsidy or outright grant of up to £100 million to make the golf course that Trump owns but is loss-making profitable again by forcing the British Open Championship Golf Authority to assign the Open Championship to Turnberry in 2028. You've got to remember, Chris, this wasn't a state visit. Trump went to the golf courses, Turnberry in southwestern Scotland and Aberdeen in northeastern Scotland, the two golf courses he has owned for some years in Scotland, to advertise their value, their asset value to him. Why did he do that? Well, I've done a piece that the audience can go check the numbers from, and those numbers come from the British UK government, corporate register, where Trump's two golf course companies have to file their numbers. They are loss-making operationally. They owe more money, millions and millions of pounds in loan money to the rest of the Trump group than their asset value, the asset value he attributes in his books to those two golf courses. The only way he thinks Turnberry, where in Ayrshire, in southwestern Scotland, where the meetings with that you're talking about took place, the only way these debt-ridden, operational, loss-making assets can be made to turn around is either the British government subsidizes and for the infrastructure costs of making the golf course accessible for another Open Championship, or Trump will sell the assets to whatever investor he believes he can obtain value for money from Trump. And that's not from running these golf courses. It's from political favor and other economic favor. And that sort of deal is a bribe, and Trump is committing a crime if that's what he was doing. Of course, no one would prosecute him in the United States. So what Starmer did, and you can hear it very clearly as Trump kept on advertising how beautiful Turnberry was, what a lovely ballroom, how big the ceilings were, all this other rubbish, had a calculation, money calculation. And Starmer was forced to listen to a planted journalist question, will you, Prime Minister, bring the British Open Championship back to Turnberry? Imagine in time of war in Europe and trade war in the world that Trump's inflicting, a golf course issue was raised. And why was it raised? Because Trump was there for that. And Starmer said, that's not my jurisdiction. It's not my authority. It's the golf authorities that will decide that. That's Starmer's way of resisting. So what Starmer showed was that the dog can not only run away, put its tail between its legs, but by running away, it can resist. So we can go on to how to beat Trump. And right. Trump has now made a lethal mistake for any politician or war maker. He has now assembled more enemies than he can fight at the same time.
Yeah, well, and his friends aren't too friendly either. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia and is the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. His latest book is Long Live Novichok, The British Poison That Fooled the World. We're talking in and around his recent article at Dances with Bears. When negotiation fails, try bribery. When that fails, try extortion. When that fails, force. Well, if he, Donald, keeps his books the way he keeps his golf scores, then I would think nobody would want to be picking up his golf course boondoggle. The Wall Street Journal, John, has just reported, though, something of interest, that there is a new plan in the States, a so-called Peace Act proposed in the Congress that would be a special fund kept at the U.S. Treasury where allies of America could purchase or put in a kitty to buy American weapons to be gifted to Ukraine to a tune of $5 to $8 billion per annum. The Wall Street Journal is reporting this, and they say that the White House is supportive of this initiative. Is this the lever that Trump thinks he has over von der Leyen and the people of Europe, not to mention Canada, to pry from them their life savings and social programs?
Well, certainly the Trump strategy depends on making a sequencing of wars. We've talked about this in earlier programs, Chris. At the Pentagon, Elbridge Colby, the Deputy Secretary or Undersecretary for Policy, has devised and written about with his colleagues a strategy of fighting one war at a time. And in that strategy, the war against Russia is principally to be fought on the ground and in the money, just like you said, by the European states. That means that Trump continues to make the empire great again by forcing the allies into vassal state tribute, paying more and more and more to the United States in order to keep that war going. that forces each of the European states to say, is this war against Russia costing us more than peace with Russia? That's one of the mistakes you make if you want to sequence wars to create more enemies on each war that you've got than you can fight at one time. The second war that Trump is sequencing is the war in the Middle East. There, as we've talked, as your audience know all too well, the US-Israel policy is genocide, to murder and remove from Palestine every Palestinian until what's left is a Jewish state expanding into Lebanon, expanding into Syria, and expanding to destroy the only major source of resistance it faces by war. That's Yemen, the Houthi resistance in the south, and Iran in the east. So what we have is not a sequencing of wars, but a build-up of the capacity for the first time of Iran with its allies, principally Russia, to deter and to counterattack the Americans and the Israelis as they approach after the little war of last month. On sequencing of wars, Trump is now making a fundamental strategic error in making a war enemy of India, which has just been, he announced, penalized with a 25% tariff and plus penalties, plus opening of a secondary sanctions campaign to prevent and penalize India and China from trading oil with and energy products with Russia. So what Trump is doing is not sequencing a war, but maximizing and multiplying his enemies all at once.
Of India, he said, I saw him speaking about this in regards to BRICS, and he said, I'll quote part of him, he goes, they, India, sell a lot to us, but we don't buy from them. And so he's going to lay these penalties against India, that, even though he's a friend, he says, of Prime Minister Modi.
Well, it's a turgid job for you and me to have to read what he says. I recommend that the audience minimize their exposure to this. It's worse to watch him than to read him. And you can read him by going to rollcall.com and then using the categories to read the texts of on transcripts, the written transcripts of these productions.
The transcripts, he looks insane. I mean, somehow he gets away with it when you're looking at him. I guess you're distracted. But when you read it, it's like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Well, that's to apply sanity checks. That's to apply normal vocabulary checks. It's to require him to show that he's not as seriously cognitively handicapped as his predecessor, President Biden, was. In Biden's case, he had Parkinson's disease, which with advancing Lewy body dementia, which is a form of dementia associated with that disease in which you're sounding perfectly rational at 1 minute and then you go irrational the next for an unspecified amount of time. That's the kind of dementia that Biden had. In Trump's case, I've spelled it out in print, he has white matter disease, WMD, a neurological problem in the brain. And the reason that he's keeping secret, the brain scans that were done immediately after the two of them, after the assassination attempt of a year ago, and the subsequent scanning that has been done, the reason Trump was so intent on preventing even the hospital staff keeping those images is that those images show the rapid spread of WMD in the brain. That produces the kind of symptoms that you can see, the endless repetition of the same slogans, the very limited vocabulary. And let's skip from the neurology to the meaning. This is a man who doesn't negotiate, who doesn't really want to negotiate. He said as much in Scotland when asked about President Putin and the end of war negotiations in the Ukraine. He said, I'm not interested in talking. I'm going to give him 50 days. Then, as you pointed out, it was reduced to 10 days. And really, he's not interested in the negotiating the end of war. The only way to deal with Trump is to fight him now. Mm. And you've got a massive sense of relief in Moscow that for the first time, this policy of combining sweet nothings that President Putin has applied to Trump and advancing on the battlefield by drone, by infantry, by artillery, and by missile to eliminate the enemy of Russia, that's the US, the European alliance, and the Ukraine. For the first time, what we see is the relief in Russia that all optimism that you can negotiate anything with Trump has gone. It's not just a case of Trump is not interested to negotiate. He can't comprehend. He cannot comprehend either the 33 points of end of settlement, end of war settlement the Russians tabled.
But is that his job? He's got other, he's just a front man anyway. I mean, it's not that the whole administration has gone brain dead.
Well, I didn't say brain dead. I better just say brain
I'm being
mad.
I'm being mad. Yeah.
Well, of course, the rest of the administration, and I mentioned the Pentagon and the State Department under Rubio, the National Security Council under Rubio, are these elements will and J.D. Vance, who waits to succeed when Trump fails, falls, or ends his term, these elements have to calculate how they can best survive in their jobs with their power, and they have to make the same electoral calculations that Trump and his staff make that I've just spelled out. If the cost of this warring, no negotiation, war on trade, on penalty sanctions, the secondary sanctions that you mentioned, and on the battlefields, if this policy begins to impose the two fundamental costs the United States cannot bear, that no regime in Washington can tolerate because it will be defeated. If those calculations go negative for them, they will rebel against Trump, and they will compel Trump to back down, to retreat, to run away. What are those two calculations? The two calculations that kill a presidency electorally: high inflation and body bags. You have the combination of death on the battlefield, losing wars, and high inflation. That combination defeats presidents. That was the combination during the Vietnam War that ultimately destroyed Lyndon Baines Johnson, that forced Nixon into making the peace and running away from Vietnam. A presidency.
Well, I don't know that the NATO countries, Canada included, have time to wait for Trump to fall by the electoral process. Even if he does try to run again, or the Vance, talk about a successor so steeped in ambition. It just oozes out of every pore, it seems, of that guy. John, sadly, we're out of time. Go to John's website, johnhelmer.net. His latest is, has the Kremlin crossed the S-400 threshold to fire on Israeli U.S. aircraft attacking Iran? We don't have time to get to that today, but you did talk at length with Nima Al-Khorshid, rather, at Dialogue Works. Go to YouTube and look up Dialogue Works to see that. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on again, eh?
Thank you very much for having us. Next time, we talk about how carnies either fights and loses or runs away. We'll talk about Canada next time. Thank you.
Well, and also thanks to John Zada. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time.
The tabloid press, the IMF, and all the landed gentry. They're pulling out the stops to stop the ascendancy of I Agree with Jeremy. The case before the nation is the one that we all face. What direction now goes this human race? Do we give up on the missiles and tax the rich a lot? Or give up on society and just embrace the rot? Among us, who would tell us it's the foreigners to blame, not the Blairite Tory billionaires and their neoliberal game? Each day the numbers grow.